Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we have a very, very special guest, someone who we've taken the opportunity to invite back on because we did a sensational podcast with her a few months back, and she was in the process of releasing a book, which had just come out, and I want to give her a chance to talk a little bit about the book, which I think offers a very, very important message for parents, for grandparents, anyone who's in the process of raising kids. The book is entitled The Dirt Cure, Growing Healthy Kids with Food. And our guest is a fellow alumna of my medical school, Albert Einstein College of Medicine. It shows you that even mainstream medical schools can sometimes graduate individuals who think a little bit out of the box, like yours truly and like today's guest. And she's also unique among integrative physicians in that she is a pediatric neurologist. Now, pediatric neurologists are generally the folks you go to if your kid's acting out in school, getting bad grades, jumping around too much. And you go there sometimes soliciting a prescription for Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, something to focus your kid's behavior. That's, I would say, the vast majority of what pediatric neurologists are doing these days. However, our guest is focusing more on a functional medicine biomedical approach to optimizing kids' health. The full title of the book, The Dirt Cure, Growing Healthy Kids with Food Straight from the Soil. And without further ado, here's our guest, Dr. Maya Shetree Klein. It's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you for having me.
Well, okay, well, tell us a little bit about your own personal background, because, you know, you were credentialed in a mainstream way, but you have kids. And in the book, you describe your own personal experience with your youngest son. Tell us a little bit about that, and perhaps that was a catalytic experience for you, getting you more interested in this approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was always interested in integrative medicine, probably long before many people were, because I watched Bill Moyers' Healing and the Mind when I was in I think college, and I thought, well, wow, this is interesting. There is a section on psychoneuroimmunology, and these hospital doctors, these academic doctors, who were trying to use associations with, like, a person who had lupus, a young girl who had lupus, who couldn't tolerate medication because of side effects, but needed it. And so they were giving it to her at the same time that they were giving her castor oil. And then eventually they stopped giving her the actual medication and just gave her castor oil. And she maintained the effects as if she was getting the medication. And I thought, wow, this is what I want to do. That's the thing I'm going to do. And
okay.
I decided to apply to medical school. And, you know, somehow I talked about that and I still got in. I don't know exactly how that happened.
I had a similar experience at Einstein, because I was a little bit the oddball applicant, already interested in diet and nutrition. And I kind of kept it a little bit on the down low during my interview so as not to completely antagonize them. But I had a sympathetic interviewer who said, wow, you know, that's great. If you're interested in that, you know, you sound like you might be able to make a more of a unique contribution.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, I was also an English major in college, so, you know, I definitely brought different things. And I think, you know, when people are interviewing potential medical students and they see someone who's passionate and thoughtful, that's actually, you know, something that they want. So I don't think that was all I spoke about. I mean, I spoke about a lot of things, but certainly that was way back when what I was interested in. And then, you know, you get kind of sucked into the training, and it's very, you know, kind of overwhelming in terms of just the sheer volume of information that you have to know. And, of course, during that time, I also had my daughter in medical school, a son while I was in pediatrics residency, and then my third when I was in my neurology fellowship. So it was a busy time. And then when my youngest son was about a year, he suddenly started to have these rashes and respiratory issues that seemed like asthma, which were very chronic and kind of never went away, never got better, and medication didn't really seem to help him. And actually was having a developmental, at the time I thought it was a developmental plateau, but looking back, I mean, it really probably was a certain regression. And I was, of course, a pediatric neurology fellow and was very upset and worried, and no one really thought very much of it and really had anything to say about it. And, you know, after some months of this and kind of, you know, steroids, antibiotics, albuterol, you know, treadmill, you know, pretty much nonstop from his very loving, very invested pediatrician, but who really didn't have other answers, and even going to specialists who didn't really have answers and kind of treated me as a neurotic mother, as if this was like perfectly fine, normal thing, I finally said, you know, I have to figure this out for myself. And I sat down, went into the scientific literature, which is what I'd been taught to do, and started to pull out all these kind of useful nutritional supplements and other things that, you know, omega-3 fatty acids, probiotics, different things that were really in the science. I didn't know anyone else was doing this kind of work. I didn't know anyone else. I was a neurology fellow. But I put it together and eventually realized also that he was allergic to soy and finally took him off of that, and his asthma went away and his development kind of got back on track. And it definitely took, I would say, a lot of time to reverse the effects of the medications he was on, recovering his gut, right, from all the antibiotics and steroids that he'd gotten. So that was sort of how I started on this track. And, you know, you start to realize, you know, he was allergic to soy, and I thought to myself, well, how did that happen? And I started to learn a little bit about soy. I learned about, you know, genetic modification and Roundup Ready soy and how that actually means that there's quite a lot of Roundup or glyphosate on most soy, almost 100% of soy in this country. And started to learn that soy was also a hidden ingredient in, you know, most processed food and restaurant food, soybean oil, and that it actually had a lot of kind of a dark side. And that got me into learning about the food system, and the rest is history.
Indeed. And you've taken it quite a long way from your own empirical experiments with your child. I also had learned that you were a student gardener in the Bronx. Is that correct?
I was actually, when I was in my residency, in my pediatrics residency, I actually started a garden in the student housing for the residents. There were garden apartments there, and I got permission to grow this garden, and I used to garden with my daughter, first child, who was a toddler, and we sort of had a certain amount of notoriety because everyone would walk past the garden and find all these vegetables and fruit growing there. And then when I came to the Bronx and opened my practice, I'd been really longing to grow again, and we just hadn't been able to because I was living in an apartment. But once I opened my practice, we found this space that had a abandoned lot behind it, and the person who was renting us the space said, yeah, you can use that. And we actually learned, I worked with someone who studied permaculture, and we built the soil so it became healthier and more microbe and nutrient rich. We tested it for heavy metals, and we built what's called a food forest, which is all different kinds of vines, trees, you know, plants, flowers, sort of the whole realm of different kind of ways that you can get food, and put in a chicken coop. And so I raised chickens.
So in other words,
sort of my little Bronx farm.
Well, so somebody goes to the pediatrician, in your case, they walk into your office, and then through the back door, they can walk into this jungle of organic produce?
essentially, you know, they would come to see the pediatric neurologist, and they'd say, oh, can I go in the back and see the chickens? And that was like something, you know, that would take a piece of time, you know, because I would spend an hour and a half often speaking to parents in a first visit, and so that could be something that they'd go see the chickens, see if they'd lay any eggs, what was in season, and sometimes, you know, pick some cherry tomatoes or green beans or mm-hmm. whatever was growing.
And this all goes to, you know, the dirt cure. I guess, you know, some people think, well, wow, this is a book on how you can feed dirt to your kids, and that's healthy. I don't think you'd have to take it that literally. This is about the hygiene hypothesis, the notion that we are we're biologically designed to live in proximity to pathogens. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, in essence. And that kids who grow up on farms, for example, or maybe some of the kids who come to visit you or your kids, who are exposed to dirt farming, and, you know, without disinfectants, pesticides, and the like, that they're healthier, that they're less prone to allergies and autoimmunity. Correct?
Well, you know, the way that I thought about the dirt cure and why I liked that title, which, by the way, was not popular with the publisher. They said,
right.
Dirt, disgusting, why don't you call it the pure cure?
Mm,
and I said,
yeah.
But that's the opposite of what I'm talking about.
You got to stick up for your titles.
Yeah, well, it was definitely interesting. They literally said, when we circulated that title, people recoiled and said, mm-hmm. It sounds as if you're telling people that their children should eat dirt.
No, yeah.
And I said, I am.
Yeah. You got to lose those focus groups when you're going for a
exactly.
Catchy title.
So
I think your title's just fine.
I said, for me, you know, the dirt cures three things. It's being exposed to microbes, diverse microbes. It's eating fresh, unprocessed food from healthy soil, and it's getting outdoors in nature. So those are kind of the three elements of the dirt cure, and certainly a very significant portion of that is about this idea of the hygiene hypothesis, which it turns out is not the whole story. We had this idea that, you know, okay, so children growing up on farms are actually less allergic and maybe have less autoimmune disease and so on, and maybe that's because there's more microbes there, and they're kind of dirtier. And so that was actually investigated, and the researchers measured the levels of microbes in the farm and in an urban apartment. And what they found actually was that bacteria levels were quite similar. So there weren't more bacteria per se on the farm, but what there were vastly more diverse microbes
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
on the farm. So it's really not so much like just being dirtier, but of course that is what it is in a sense. Mm-hmm. It's also about diversity, microbial diversity, and this idea that although we've thought we're really in a war on bugs, right? I mean, I think this is certainly true in the mainstream medical community, but also even in the integrative community, I think there's sort of this idea that, you know, parasites are bad, viruses are bad, you know, fungi are bad, yeast is bad, you know, and this sort of idea that we have to be in constant war with them, when actually, you know, there's this idea that it matters less the microbe, right, and more the terrain. So
right.
This idea of terrain medicine, which is what, you know, I've been developing and what I'm teaching people now in a training program, is about how the inner terrain reflects the outer terrain, and the health of the inner terrain in our bodies is a reflection of the health of our outer terrain. And it turns out that being exposed to bacteria, viruses, fungi, parasites even, is potentially beneficial to our immune systems, our digestive tracts, even our brains.
And, of course, you're resurrecting an argument that's about 150 years old, because a lot of people remember Louis Pasteur, the father of the germ theory and the father of pasteurization. But for a while, he had an arch rival. And in the old days, they didn't have the Internet. They didn't have TV. An entertainment venue was to go to lectures, public lectures, where there would be debates. And Louis Pasteur debated a cat named Claude Bernard, who once famously said, le microbe, ce n'est rien. The microbe is nothing. Le terrain, c'est tout. Forgive my poor French pronunciation. The terrain is everything. and it turns out Claude Bernard was a big loser. Louis Pasteur became the predominant view of medicine. And we then developed all these wonderful antibiotics, magic bullets, antivirals. And that's the way we approach things these days. But what's wrong with that approach when it comes to children's health?
Well, the germ theory, I mean, so Louis Pasteur actually really did a good job of, you know, discovering this idea of microbes, although some people feel it wasn't really all him. So there's probably a little more of a complex story there. But, you know, ultimately, this idea that microbes are these sort of invisible to the naked eye organisms that may be involved in disease and infection, you know, it was not, we're not saying this is all wrong. I mean, clearly there was some value and truth to that. And really what what I think the issue is that he really felt like this is some, these are things that invade us and they're not part of us, and that, you know, we have to basically fight against them. And that became the predominant, as you say, paradigm. And it led to things like pasteurization because of this idea. Actually, the reason that milk ended up being pasteurized is because the cows were being raised in very filthy conditions in urban environments right next to whiskey plants, and were getting what fed, you know, these swill dairies, they were called, and the cows were very sick and not in sunshine and not in pasture, and it was making people, not surprisingly, very sick. And so pasteurization became the way to kind of mask that there were sick animals. And it caught on to such a degree that actually at that time fermented foods were considered to be contaminated. Sourdough bread or yogurt or kefir, or the way that most people were actually naturally eating cultured foods, which we again now know are much healthier for us than non-cultured foods, you know, the pendulum really swung in this direction that was about sterile. Sterile is better. But Claude Bernard, he was in a sense, I would call them frenemies, as my tweens would say, because they were actually colleagues, and I think probably had a mutual respect and debated each other. You know, it,
like
said,
Antonin Scalia and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, they were friendly rivals.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So, so Claude Bernard said, you know, it's not the organism. It's actually that organisms live in our body all the time, and that it's really the person's health, it's the wellness of the person that determines how that relationship progresses. So in a person who's healthy, that the organisms don't cause problems and may contribute to health. In a person who's not healthy, for any number of reasons, and it could be nutritional, it could be other things, that then essentially the microbes can become a problem. But most of the microbes are actually microbes that our bodies are familiar with, and that certainly sounds familiar now, because here, you know, here we now know that things like probiotics are beneficial. We're learning all this about the, you know, everything from the gut microbiome to the skin microbiome, you know, to the nasal microbiome to the, you know, armpit microbiome. I mean, so we're learning this relationship that we have is critical to our health, and that these organisms are actually a part of us. You know, one of the things I found so fascinating in my research was, you know, we're all kind of programmed to think that viruses are unequivocally bad. And, you know, I found this interesting research that looked at different kinds of viruses. First of all, one article that was published in the journal Nature, I think it was just last year in late 2014, looked at actually how in germ-free mice, where they gave them, you know, huge doses of antibiotics to basically make their guts completely sterile, normally they have huge digestive problems and a lot of gut breakdown and immune problems. When they added in a certain murine norovirus, a certain strain of a virus, those mice had absolutely no blip in their health whatsoever. Hmm. They basically, these viruses took over for the bacteria in the gut and basically were protective, incredibly protective. So it taught us a little bit about the microbiome, and which I thought was fascinating. And then we learn also in the research, you know, these little blips, like people who have mumps have half the risk of developing ovarian cancer later in life because their immune systems produce certain proteins that actually are protective for targeting ovarian cancer. So viruses are very interesting indeed, you know, and we definitely, I think, have a lot to learn about all these different organisms that we've thought were bad. Even parasites, right? I mean, most people have heard now about these parasite eggs and helminths, you know, worms basically deactivated being used to treat things like Crohn's disease, effectively treat Crohn's disease, and they're being investigated for lots of different autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. So
I think there's even research at Einstein or alma mater on the use of these to treat autism coming from the research showing that it helps certain other autoimmune diseases of the gastrointestinal tract, that it may have a profound effect throughout the nervous system since there's a gut-brain connection. So this is interesting. All right. So this is a good point at which to pause. You know, the book is The Dirt Cure, Growing Healthy Kids with Food Straight from Soil. Our guest is Dr. Maya Shatreat Klein. She's a pediatric neurologist with a unique perspective on children's health. And when we return, we're going to talk specifically about issues like food allergies, some of the artificial additives that we put in food, organic foods. We're going to give you some tips on food selection for your kids. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.